Okay, let's get going. And we're going to find some things out this hour that many of you haven't seen. I have done my damnedest to stay away from the ugly, hideous, nonstop avalanche of Western lies and propaganda. I've never seen more lies in my life in terms of covering an event like the Russian operation, the special operation in what they call Ukraine. It's really a sewer than I have from the Western media. And I include some of the British channels and all the rest. They're just, I've never seen lies. It's like somebody paid for, well, it's probably gratis, the best public relations frauds and liars in the world to represent the Ukraine government and that little creep Zelensky. Ugh, vile. We get a chance to spend an hour with Russell Bentley, who has been a friend of this program and a friend of the Ukraine people. He is, in fact, a Ukrainian right now, a Russian-Ukrainian, as it were, and probably just a Russian to wrap it all up. Russell, where are you and how are you?
Hi, Jeff. Great to be on your show again. Thank you very much for having me. Right
My
now,
pleasure.
I'm in the center of the city of Donetsk, which is the capital of the Donetsk People's Republic, one of two republics that broke away from Ukraine after the U.S.-backed coup d'etat in 2014.
Donetsk is a beautiful city, thanks to you and the videos you've made available for years now. Americans have gotten to take a look at something they would otherwise only read lies about. Lies spewing out of Kiev, lies spewing out of that little creep's mouth. I cannot stomach the guy. And I won't stop there. The lies continue, coming from NATO, Western European countries, the UK especially, and the American mainstream media. I have never, as I said, seen more falsehoods being presented as news. Never. Just as sickening.
And, you know, I'll give you a couple of examples, Jeff, of just how really bad it is. I recently wrote an article for a website called Covert Action Magazine, and I put some photos in there. On the 14th of March of this year, the Ukrainian army launched a premeditated mass murder terrorist attack on the center of Donetsk with a Tochka-U ballistic missile.
Yep.
This is a very, very old Soviet-style missile, but it's still very deadly. It contains a 1,000-pound warhead. The warhead can be high explosive, it can be nuclear, it can be chemical, or in this case, it was anti-personnel. It was filled with cluster bombs. And what they had done in the preceding days is they had used their troll army on Russian social media, and they had put out a bunch of false news items saying that the wives and mothers and sisters and daughters of people that were serving in the Donetsk People's Republic Defense Forces could go to the Republic Administration Building on Monday at 12:30, and there they could get information on the status of their loved ones that were serving in the army.
Yeah.
And this was the target. This was fake news. And in fact, the Ukrainian SBU, which is like the Ukrainian CIA, Secret Service Gestapo, had even spoofed a DPR, Ministry of Information phone numbers, and had sent text messages out to people, the wives and daughters of soldiers that said the same thing, to go to the administration building at 12:30 on Monday, March 14th. And I know this for a fact because I actually I had a friend that was wounded, and I went to visit him in his hospital, and his daughter was there, and she showed me the text message on her phone, you know, so it's not a rumor or anything. I can confirm it with my own eyes. And so they fired this Tochka-U with the anti-personnel cluster bombs, which are illegal, by the way.
Yes.
They're war prohibited
crimes.
Weapons.
Yeah. Right. That's
and
right.
Our air defense hit the missile and deflected it from the administration building. And fortunately, of the 50 cassettes of cluster musicians of munitions, only two of them went off. And but still,
wow.
Just to show how deadly this weapon is, mm-hmm. since only two out of 50 went off, but it still killed 24 people, 24 innocent civilians that were just driving down University Boulevard on a nice spring day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's pretty bad. I mean, and I was there, you know, a couple hours later, you know, blood all over the street.
We got your story. You know. We got your pictures. I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so, but here's the thing. The very next day, an Italian newspaper called La Stampa, on their front page, there was a photographer who took a picture of, you know, maybe four or five dead bodies in the street, you know, the emergency services there working. And this one man who was standing weeping over the body of his wife who had been killed.
And I saw it.
La Stampa stole this picture from this photographer who had published it on his website or whatever.
Yeah.
They stole it. They didn't ask permission. They didn't pay him. They didn't even credit him. And they put it on their front page. And then the headline, you know, Ukraine braces for more Russian attacks. So literally, they show a picture of Ukraine murdering our civilians, and then they imply by their headlines that it's Russia murdering Ukrainian civilians. I mean, that's not a lie. That's a damn lie. That is the exact opposite of the truth.
We really have to, Russ, excuse me, but honestly, this is top drawer bullshit that they're throwing out. They're corrupting reality. They're inventing reality. This is beyond lying. They've got the best of the best disinformation liars working for the Kiev Zionist dictatorship. They've outlawed all opposition parties, for God's sakes. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, dude, my at the beginning of this operation, I'd had a YouTube channel for more than a dozen years. And I had done a lot of work on that, especially since I'd been here. But I also had, you know, like music videos that I'd put up years ago and stuff like that. And right at the beginning of Operation Z, which is not an invasion, it is a liberation, a denazification of a foreign-backed Nazi government.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning of Operation Z, I made a 40-second video just, you know, showing me with, you know, a bunch of Russian tanks and saying that these guys are getting ready to liberate Ukraine. We're going to help the good guys, and we're going to kick the ass of the bad guys. And in one day, it got 150,000 views, and it got me 15,000 new subscribers, which was great, except then the next day, YouTube deletes my channel. I mean, I've been deleted from Twitter since 2016. I got deleted from Facebook maybe in 2020, and now from YouTube. The only real platforms, I had two websites, both of which got hacked, and I'm now locked out of. And I started the third one on Wix, and then I get this message that, you're not allowed to have a website on Wix. We've deleted it.
Wow.
So, I mean, the only platforms that I have for media right now for, you know, journalism, I mean, and I do write and publish in, you know, various, you know, alternative news websites and stuff like that. I'm very grateful to be able to be on your show, because I know it reaches a lot of people, and that's important. But the only thing that I have, like, for daily, you know, news and communication is VKontakt, also known as VK. It's like Russian Facebook, but without the censorship, and actually with a much, much higher quality of information, discourse, and people. It's worth the trouble of trying to get on there. You know, it's in Russian, but there's, you know, browsers. I use the Firefox browser and an add-on called Translate Websites. And in two clicks, the whole news feed, all the comments, all the links and everything is translated into English. I mean, it's just a much better way of getting news. And it doesn't have the, you know, the absurd censorship that Facebook or Twitter has. The other thing that I have is Telegram, which is kind of an alternative to Twitter. And then both of these are, you know, you know, thousands of people from the West are coming onto these platforms every day because they're tired of the censorship and disinformation.
Correct.
That, you know, Twitter and Facebook and some of these other, you know, Western popular platforms have.
And, you know, really and I'll mention, go Russ, go. No, you go.
I was just going to say that I'll mention, too, that the La Stampa was not by any means an isolated incident. You know, 2 weeks after the attack with the Tochka U in Donetsk City Center, they shot another ballistic missile at civilian areas in Donetsk, in my neighborhood, Petrovsky District, which is one of the most heavily bombed areas. And it was either Tochka U or a Uragan hurricane missile. Excuse me. And it hit an apartment complex or apartment building. And it blew off about half of the top three floors of the building. And then the next day, the New York Post shows a photograph of that building that was blown up in Donetsk by a Ukrainian army missile on their front page. And it says, you know, Ukraine braces for more Russian or Russia continues to attack Ukrainian cities.
See?
And I mean,
yeah.
And it's not like, oh, gee, we made a mistake. We thought it was a Ukrainian city. They know absolutely without a doubt that they're putting a photograph of a Ukrainian army attack on Donbass civilians, and they're saying it that it's Russian attack on Ukrainians. You know, I mean, this is intentionally, you know, it's intentional disinformation by the clowns that claim to be telling the truth and claim to be able to protect Americans from disinformation. And it's just complete, it's a complete lie.
I really do feel sympathy and I feel compassion for Americans who have been so duped, Russ, so tricked that they're putting Ukraine flags in their yards, stickers on their cars. They have been conned to the max by these frauds, and it makes me sick. Meanwhile, American military and other intel is being funneled to these killers nonstop around the clock. We know that. They're targeting with satellites all manner of military, well, we'll call them targets as well, because that's what they are. The Americans are giving every possible aid and assistance to the Uke, I call them Ukes, to the Uke military and killers and Muslims and mercenaries and butchers and all the rest of it. People wouldn't believe it. This is not, we are directly at war with Russia. I don't care if we're actually on the front line pulling the trigger, we're providing the weapons, we're providing the ammunition, we are in direct conflict with Russia. And the question I have for you, my friend, is simple. How much more restraint is Putin going to be able to muster in the face of the most overt effort to force a nation into war that I have ever seen or read about? NATO, 50,000 troops in a big, what they call, it's just a drama. They're just presenting, practicing. It's nothing. Don't worry about it. 3 miles from the Russian border yesterday or the day before. And now today they had another drill which was almost adjacent to a Russian military installation across the border in Russia. So you can call these exercises, you can call them whatever you want, but how much more is Russia going to sustain or absorb before they lash out? That's
well,
the big question.
You know, there's one thing that's for sure is that there's a lot going on politically, you know, behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I mean, for instance, you know, Russia has not targeted Zelensky or the, you know, the Verkhovna Rada, the Ukrainian parliament or whatever you might say. They haven't targeted a lot of, you know, high value targets that they could hit anytime. You know, they know where they are and they could hit them anytime they want. And they haven't, you know. And by the same token, it's, you know, it, to be honest, you know, the Ukrainians have, to a great degree, have not targeted, like, the head of our republic, Denis Pushilin, or our parliament or anything like that. So there's obviously, to a certain extent, a quid pro quo, you know, we won't shoot your president if you don't shoot our president type thing going on.
Right.
I mean, the... you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, Russia is being extremely, extremely gentle with the kid glove treatment
of
how they're prosecuting this war. I mean, if they went in like the U.S. went in to Iraq or Libya or Afghanistan, you know, or even Somalia, you know, the war would be over and, you know, Kiev would be a smoking ruin. And there'd be 500,000 dead Ukrainians. And, you know, half of them would be soldiers and the other half would be so-called, as America calls it, collateral damage. They're not doing that at all. Russians are making every effort to save civilian lives and to preserve civilian infrastructure. And, of course, that, I mean, to the extent that that's actually costing them Russian soldiers' blood and lives, and also it's costing them to some degree
a lot.
The military initiative. But, you know, there's a reason for that. I mean, and Russia understands. I mean, and of course it's the honorable and moral thing to do, and Vladimir Putin is an honorable and moral man by any measurement. I mean, particularly if you compare him to you know, the thing that represents the United States, you know, or the vice president or the head of the, you know, the Speaker of the House of Representatives. I mean, you know, these are, you know, these are, can hardly be called animals, you know, and Vladimir Putin, you know, he's a chess master. He's a black belt in judo. He's a black belt in taekwondo. He's the greatest statesman of the 21st century by far. You know, and he's also really, you know, genuinely nice guy. So, you know, all the talk of being a dictator and a butcher and all that stuff, it's just lies by the actual hypocrites that are those things that they're calling Putin. But Putin and the Russian military political structure, you know, they're not invading Ukraine. They do not want to occupy Ukraine. They're liberating Ukraine from the U.S.-backed Nazis that were put in power by the United States back in 2014. This war didn't start 3 months ago. It started 8 years ago. And we've been under shelling, you know, like the Ukrainians are under now. We've been under it for 8 years. They're under it for 3 months, and they're like saying, oh, it's the tragedy and the human, you know, suffering and all that stuff.
Never mind. Never mind the 15,000.
Been killed by the Ukrainian army.
Yeah, 14 to 15,000 of the innocents in Donbass have been sacrificed, murdered by these people.
Murdered. Exactly.
Just sickening.
I mean, it's when the third most powerful army in Europe targets civilian areas with heavy artillery, with ballistic missiles, with aircraft, with airstrikes, you know, with snipers and everything else in between, you know, it's murder. It's not a war. It's not even a civil war. It's an attack of Nazis against normal people who are just defending themselves and their families and homes. Now, You know, people are saying, oh, well, Russians are losing. You know, they're going so slow, they haven't accomplished anything. Actually, Russia's taken quite a significant part of Ukraine under its control, including now Mariupol, which was just denazified in the last couple of days. It's completely, you know, Nazi-free now. There's no military, Ukrainian military presence there. And people are saying, oh, well, you know, the Russians aren't, you know, they're losing because they're not making any advance or something. And the best way to explain the Russian military strategy, the slowness of their advances, is by one of my favorite old jokes. And Jeff, perhaps you know the old joke about the old bull and the young bull that are standing on the hill looking down at the herd of cows.
I don't know. Tell me.
All right, dude. Well, prepare to laugh. Okay, so the old bull and the young bull are standing on the herd of cows, or standing on the hill looking down at this herd of cows. And I'm going to try and put this like in the family-friendly way.
Okay.
And so the young bull says, well, let's run down the hill and go have sex with one of those cows. And the old bull looks at him and he says, no, let's walk down the hill and have sex with all of those cows.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
That's the
I got it.
Approach that Russian military has taken. They don't want to destroy the country. They don't want to kill civilians. They don't even want to kill soldiers. They want to capture and try the war criminals, and they want to keep the Ukrainian army. They want to stop it from murdering their own citizens, who also might happen to be Russian citizens, who are ethnic Russians.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've been in Mariupol, you know, multiple times now, and it is a lesson for the world to see what happened to that city. I mean, it's not completely destroyed, but probably 40% of the houses and apartments are destroyed, you know. I mean, there's whole swaths of the city that are going to have to be torn down to be rebuilt, you know. But I can tell you this, too. I've been in Grozny in Chechnya, which is a world-class city. I mean, it's absolutely pristine, beautiful. And, you know, 20 years ago, it was blown down completely. I mean, it was like Fallujah, you know, or Sirte in Libya.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was basically completely blown down. Russia has rebuilt it, and it's now a prosperous, beautiful city. And we're going to do the same thing with Mariupol and whatever other cities get damaged or, you know, to whatever extent destroyed. Russia wants, it's not going to occupy Ukraine. It's not going to absorb Ukraine into the Russian Federation. It's going to liberate Ukraine and then denazify. It's going to punish the war criminals. And we've brought, in the last couple of days, 2,000 Azov Battalion Nazis to Donetsk. And they're going to be tried in Donetsk. And the Donetsk People's Republic, unlike Russia and like the United States, does have the death penalty. And I imagine that some of these guys are going to hang for the crimes that they have committed, the murders, the rapes, you know, the tortures, torturing people to death. There was whole, you know, unmarked graveyards near the airport in Mariupol that as the Russians advanced, you know, there's citizens were saying, hey, they're out there with tobacco, you know, digging up truckloads of dead bodies and hauling them off somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys, they're genuine Nazis. It's not an exaggeration and it's not like hyperbole or rhetoric to call them Nazis. They have swastika tattoos.
Yeah, I would suggest, Russ, if I could, I would suggest, honestly, those scum give World War II German military a bad, bad name. They do. They're worse.
It's a fact, man. I mean, in fact, their hero is this guy, Stefan Bandera, who was a genuine Nazi collaborator during the Second World War when the Germans occupied Ukraine. And his organization, the OUN, was actually, you know, disgusted and terrified the German Nazis with the atrocities that they committed. And they really were horrible. I mean, they would go into these villages, round everybody in the village up, put them like in the central church, and then burn it down with all the people inside alive. I mean, and this happened, you know, not here and there. It happened over 600 times in Belarus, and more times than that in Ukraine and in the parts of Russia that were occupied. I mean, in the city of Donetsk, where I am right now, the German army occupied the city of Donetsk, which was then called Stalino, for 700 days, exactly 700 days. And there is a mine shaft here in the middle of the city, the 4-4 mine. And in 700 days, they threw at least 75,000 human beings down this vertical shaft that was like 365 meters deep, you know, so it was well over a 1,000 feet deep. And they murdered, and then, and that's the minimum. You know, so you're talking about 100 innocent people, including whole families, that were taken to this mine shaft and just thrown in.
I'm very grateful to learn that they are going to be put on trial in Donetsk, because the witnesses are available and they will testify.
That's right. They're, I mean, and it's really important not only to for the world to understand what these, you know, what these U.S.-backed Nazi war criminal
terrorists U.S.-backed,
U.S.-trained,
U.S.-directed, U.S.-supplied. Absolutely. You got it.
You know, and it's not only important for the world to understand what they have done, but, you know, also for them to be made an example of. You know, I mean, you know, I'm all for mercy. You know, I mean, I'm a Christian, a Russian Orthodox Christian, and I, you know, I believe in mercy, but I believe in justice above all, you know. And I think that if you let these criminals get away with their crimes, I mean, one of the biggest mistakes that the Soviet Union made at the end of the Second World War was letting so many German Nazis and also Nazi collaborators, Stefan Bandera himself, escaped for many years to the West before he was finally eliminated in a special operation by the KGB. But, you know, they let too many of these Nazis from the Second World War get away, you know, and that was, and a lot of that was with the help of the Vatican and with the help of the U.S. government itself, the OSS and the
well,
CIA.
Well, they wanted the tech. They wanted the technology. That's what it was. They let them go. And, all right, this is going to be fascinating to watch. In a grim way, the trial of these 2,000 butchers, they're just sickening to read about what they've done over there. Same thing you mentioned about World War II. You know, brutality and inhuman behavior, it's just bizarre how it comes out of people. You think it's not there, but it is. Not in everybody. But these people really are evil. And I was quite surprised that they actually surrendered. And I think it was a selfish decision by Zelensky, so he wasn't put up and harangued as being a butcher of his own people. He let them all die, so he had to do something to say. And it was just done for his own political image. Could they take Zelensky? They could take Zelensky out if they wanted to, but we've got this agreement you mentioned, and that's apparently preventing
it. And it's nothing official. It just, you know, it's from my observations that they haven't been targeting the heads of the Ukrainian government, and the Ukrainian army thus far has not targeted the heads of the republic governments. Although there are stories about several Russian generals that have been targeted and killed by Ukrainian shelling that was directed by U.S. Intelligence information. You know, they have very powerful systems that can geolocate a person's cell phone, you know, down to the square meter. And, you know, then they just send that information to the closest artillery. But, you know, one thing, too, about this war is that, you know, The first thing to understand, for Americans to understand, is that this war's been going on for 8 years. It was started by the overthrow of the democratically elected government by the United States in the color revolution in the spring of 2014. A genuine Nazi government was put in power under the complete control of the U.S. government. And back then it was the Obama regime, and it was Joe Biden who was the man who made all the decisions. He was the point man for the U.S. and Ukraine. And so every, you know, dead soldier on both sides, every dead civilian on both sides, you know, every blown up house, you know, every injured kid, every hungry dog that's walking down the street looking for something to eat because their family had to flee. This is all the responsibility of the U.S. government that started this war. You know, and as they said in Nuremberg, you know, aggressive war is the supreme war crime because within it, it contains all the other crimes. So, you know, the U.S. is absolutely guilty of the supreme war crime here. This war was started, directed, and continued and escalated only by the U.S. government. You know, people say about the Russian operation that started 3 months ago, right before Russia came in, they had no choice but to come in. There was 150,000 Ukrainian army troops on the Donbass front, and they were prepared, and they were planning, and they were just to within days of launching a massive military offensive directly into our cities. They would have used our civilians as human shields, just like they did in Mariupol, against Russia's main military advantages, which are its air power, artillery, and rockets. And they were, you know, it was going to be like World War II again. They were just going to come in, and instead of, as in Mariupol, where after Russia took control of the city, you know, they're bringing in hundreds of tons every single day of human aid, food, water, medicine. You know, they're bringing in, you know, they're already restoring the water pumps and the electricity in Mariupol already. You know, I mean, so whereas Russians, after they took control, they bring in human aid and start helping people, the Ukrainians were just going to start, you know, shooting every civilian that was still here. You know, I mean, and I mean that literally. It was going to be genuine genocide of, you know, of the level of the German Nazis. Or, you know, like, say, of the, you know, the white Europeans against the Native Americans. You know, they were just going to kill everybody because they wanted the land, but they didn't want the people.
Got it.
So first of all, Russia had no choice. They could not sit by and watch. And, I mean, and there's 500,000 people in the Donbass republics who have requested and been granted Russian citizenship over the last 8 years. So, you know, there's 500,000 Russian citizens in Donbass, and if the Ukrainians just come in and start slaughtering them like, you know, like a herd of cows or something, then, you know, the Russians aren't going to just sit there and watch that happen, you know, 50 miles from their border.
Yeah. Russia, I've tried to make that point really clear to our audience, and you're talking to people who understand, so this is good.
That's good.
Great to hear it from you.
I appreciate that. But, you know, this is... this is like a genuine version of the, you know, up till now, you know, phony excuse that the U.S. has used called the responsibility to protect, or R2P, you know. Mm-hmm. And they said that, you know, when they were going into Yugoslavia, they said it when they were going into Iraq, they said that when they were going into Libya, that, oh, we have to save these innocent foreign citizens from, you know, their brutal dictator leader that's murdering them all. Well, I mean, it all turned out to be fake in all those cases, but in this case, it was real, and it wasn't foreign citizens, it was Russian citizens. So, you know, Russia did have a responsibility to protect. They came in, they're prosecuting the war as gently and as less destructively as it's possible to do, and, they're fighting against genuine, real Nazis. And so, you know, we have the moral high ground here. we have the, you know, the moral and legal right, and we're fighting against, you know, a foreign-backed Nazi power. From here, this war, you know, and the thing is, Russia can and will take as much of Ukraine as it wants to, as it feels that it needs to, in order to denazify and demilitarize the country right on its border. The chance of Ukraine winning, I mean, you understand that, you know, right now in the U.S. Congress, there's a bill to send $40 billion more military aid to Ukraine. Right. And that's all going to go right down the toilet. I mean, it's, first of all, it's not even, you know, $30 billion of it's never going to go anywhere except in, you know, the Ukrainian oligarchs' pockets.
You got
the $10 billion or whatever that does reach the front isn't going to make any difference. It's like a war between the United States and Mexico, you know, from the beginning of it.
The people over here are getting raped again. They always do, constantly.
I mean, it's tragic because, I mean, you know, the American people are as much the victims as the people of Donbass or even the people of Ukraine. I mean,
and if the people who had the Ukrainian flag flying on their house, on their porch, on whatever, or bumper stickers on their cars, if they only knew the truth. But they don't. They don't have a chance, Russ. You know how the game is played. They're brainwashed. Yeah. Well, they are completely brainwashed.
And it's a perfect example. You know, and here's the funny thing, Jeff, is that these are the same idiots, you know, that were running around virtue signaling with their COVID masks.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? They've forgotten all about COVID. I mean, you go to the store now and see how many people are wearing masks, you know?
What COVID? Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. COVID is still... It's very much here in the sense that the vaccine, which is a bioweapon, is now moving through all of those hundreds of millions that have taken the shots, and it is dragging their immune systems down into the gutter, and many of them are going to die. So it's working 24/7. Yeah, it's
but,
not.
I mean, but nobody's wearing a mask. You know, it's like these Ukrainian flags are just, you know, the latest trend. You know, that the COVID masks were a couple of years ago, you know, I mean, really meaning. I mean, it's like, and you know, and of course, you know, like you say, and I absolutely agree, this is, you know, absolutely scientific brainwashing and propaganda.
State of the
art. Against American people of the West in general. But at the same time, you know, these people that let themselves be brainwashed, you know, they also bear some of the responsibility for the crimes of their government, you know.
I concur. I absolutely concur. I think all of our listeners would concur, those who live in the U.S. We have people all around the world listening, but yes, you're right. It's our country. By our silence, we allow. And we are allowing this because we're not out in the streets. We're not protesting. We're not stopping it. We're just staring at the damn TV thinking we're being informed. Nothing could be further from the truth.
No. And it's, you know, and the thing is, this Ukrainian war, you know, everybody's going to have the Ukraine flag for now. But, bro, I can tell you, in 6 months from now, they're going to be having a picture of a loaf of bread. And nobody's going to have the actual loaf of bread. They're just going to have the picture of it. Because
not the truth.
You know, what's happening right now,
you know,
there's going to be a major famine in Europe. And it's going to probably this year, and it's probably going to be in the U.S. If not this year, then next year for sure. Because, I mean, the Secretary General of the United Nations came out yesterday or the day before, and he said, if we continue these sanctions against Russia, you know, particularly in the field of fertilizer and wheat, which Russia and Ukraine are the two biggest wheat producers, you know, or I don't know if they're the biggest, but they are a major percentage of the world wheat production. And if Russia has food security. They've had actually a bumper crop last year, as opposed to the United States, which hasn't had a good crop in the last 5 years. And you know, the thing with the fertilizer in Europe, I mean, it's very, very serious because, I mean, you know, and now this dude from the United Nations has come out and said, yeah, these sanctions are going to cause a genuine food crisis,
mm-hmm.
Which is a nice word for famine. You know, but the thing is, he's coming out and saying it too late.
Yeah, way too late.
Saying it too late because the thing is, even if tomorrow they say, okay, we're going to erase all the Russian sanctions and Russia can sell fertilizer to everybody in the world, it's already too late because by the time they can get the fertilizer, you know, throughout Europe, even if they, you know, were allowed to, which isn't going to happen. But by the time they got it there, it'd be the middle of the summer. You know, the fertilizer should have already been put on the ground that's being planted, it's being planted. And it hasn't been, so it's like it's already too late. You know, I mean, farming is a very time-sensitive endeavor. You can't plant in the fall, you know, and you can't fertilize in the summer. A German economist, you know, I mean, like a serious government representative economist, he said, you know, we're looking at realistically a loaf of bread costing 10 euros, which is about 12 bucks in Europe before the end of this year. I talked to a friend last night who was in Panama. A kilo of flour in Panama is 12 bucks right now already. And that's insane. You know, I mean, that's, you know.
So this thing is worldwide.
To the bad part yet.
Yeah, understood. People don't understand here. Americans, tragically, Russ, Americans are so naive. And I do agree with you, of course. They're certainly partially responsible for this. If they cannot, and the information is on the net if you just look for it, but they don't bother. They sit down, they crack a beer, they stare at the television. You know the game. You're an American now, a Russian citizen now. But you were American back in the day, you know. Look, these people don't get it. They just really don't understand. They've been conned like I've never seen. I've been in this business for a long time. I've never seen a bigger con job. Never. It astounds me. But that's when you own all the media, you can do whatever you damn well please with the minds of the masses. And they're doing it. And your point
and
about, where's COVID? COVID is no. It's the vax, the shots, the bioweapons that were maybe partially developed in the 30 approximately bioweapons, BSL-3, BSL-4 labs in Ukraine from the Bidens. The Bidens were involved with a lot of this stuff. So where did
all
these weapons come from?
Neck, man.
You got it.
But you know, I mean, the problem with so many American citizens, and, you know, I got to say that, you know, like, it seems to me that about 98% of U.S. citizens are, like, totally brainwashed and zombified today. You know, there's maybe 2, maybe 3%
seem that way. Yeah.
That, you know, are actually, that understand what's really going on. And, I mean, and 2 or 3% is still 7 or 8 million people. And that is enough to make a change, God willing. And I hope that something will happen where the United States can be safe. But the problem with these other people, I mean, I have a very dear loved one back in the States, and she has a master's degree in philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so, you know, philosophy, I mean, literally it means the love of wisdom, you know, the word philosophy. And talking to her about, you know, some of these uncomfortable facts, I mean, I believe it was, I was talking about the World Trade Center 7 building and the way that it collapsed and didn't get hit by a plane or anything. And she, this philosopher, this master's degree in philosophy, said the exact words, "I don't want to know." And that, my friend, is the problem, is the people, they don't want to know. And it's like, and, you know, you take somebody like Jen Psaki, the White House spokesperson or whatever, or she used to be, or I don't know. But Psaki sits there, and she lies to the White House press corps, and the press corps knows that she's lying, and she knows that they know that she's lying, and they know that she knows that they know that she's lying, and yet she still sits there straight-faced, and it's like, and that's the problem, you know? I mean, respect for the truth is the basis of all morality. If you don't have objective truth and a respect for it, there is no morality, because that's how you get these people, whatever, these things that say, oh, you know, today I'm a transgender woman, and tomorrow I'm a little pony, and the next day I'm, you know, a tomato or something, you know?
Well said. Well said. Do you know what Psaki's net worth is?
No, but...
According to Forbes magazine, she's worth $27 million. $27 million. And her take-home salary of $180,000? Come on. This is all corrupt. America is so corrupt. I know all nations have corrupt issues, but are there any that can match the corruption of this one? I kind of doubt it. It's incredible.
That's a real good point, man.
Here.
That's a good point. You know, I mean, that's why they call them prostitutes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But
wow.
This economic war is going to be the big one. It's going to be the global one. And it's going to take a lot more lives than the military one in Ukraine.
Agreed.
You know, and in fact, I mean, it's another excellent example. You know, I mean, the U.S., when it attacked Iraq, you know, I mean, just in the military part of it, killed 500,000 Iraqis. 500,000. You know, they're saying right now, I mean, the Ukrainians are saying 50,000 people got killed in Mariupol, which is a lie. Mariupol is a city of about 500,000 citizens before the war, and maybe 5,000 to 10,000 of them got killed in this liberation. You know, I mean, which
right.
That's nothing to sneeze at or to downplay by any means.
Right.
But do
but
the
let's
math.
Get the
What's
truth
the difference
out.
Between 5,000 and 500,000?
Right.
But the economic that's coming up is going to change the world in a big, big way. And you know, hopefully for the better, but it's going to be hard for a lot of people, and especially in Europe, most of all, but also in the United States. I mean, people are moving away internationally. International finance is moving away from the dollar right now, and it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. The dollar is going down. And this is the big war that Putin foresaw and understood and prepared for. You know, a lot of people, they criticize Putin because he didn't come in back in 2014, right when the fake government got installed by the U.S. The thing was, Russia has to understand, Putin did understand, even back then, that any military involvement of Russia and Ukraine could potentially lead to Russia having to face all of NATO. And Russia, in the 8 ensuing years, is prepared itself to a point where it can handle NATO. I mean, NATO is not in Ukraine because they know if they do, they will be defeated. Russia can now take on NATO and win in Ukraine and in Europe if need be.
Right.
And the economic thing is the most important thing. Russia, over the last 8 years, has built the strength of the ruble. I mean, it's down to 62 rubles to the dollar. You know, it was 100 a couple of weeks ago.
Right. I agree. This is one thing that people need to understand. Every sanction that has been leveled against Russia has only hurt the West and Americans. Every one
that
I can think of. Okay? That's number one. Number two, quick question. How will Russia deal with Sweden and Finland if they get pulled into the UN, excuse me, NATO, as they want to be?
Well, it's a very unfriendly development by Sweden and Finland. But yeah. If they do, it's like I said, NATO can handle all, I mean, Russia can handle all of NATO
yeah.
now if
yeah.
it needs to, with or without Sweden and Finland. So this is just a unpleasant but really meaningless gesture on the part of NATO and those countries.
All right. Well said. You know, my friend, you have really become an outstanding spokesman and journalist and researcher in the years that I've known you, and I want to commend you on that. You tell it straight. I've never run across anyone in a situation more difficult than you're in who has been more honorable and honest throughout the whole thing, and you have done that, so you keep it up. You're a big voice.
Thanks,
and
Jeff.
Very important.
That means a lot coming from you, and it takes one to know one.
Well, thank you. All right, my friend. We'll talk again. You be well. Be
safe.
All right.
Good luck, brother.
Okay. Good night.
Okay. Bye.
Russell Bentley. Russell Texas Bentley. And I met when I said, we've been working together since 8 years ago, 2014. And he knows what's going on. He doesn't play games. Never has. Not with me. All right. We will be back tomorrow on Friday. Hope to have the pleasure of your company tomorrow night. Lots to think about. We don't ask you to agree. We just ask you to engage in the process of thinking and discernment. Key words. Talk to you tomorrow.